Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be. Thank you for tuning in to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM, sitting in for George Norrie. I'm Dave Schrader, host of Beyond the Darkness. For those of you that are fans of Coast to Coast AM and some of the other excellent fill-in guest hosts that we have here, I had a great chance to talk with Jimmy Church on our show this last week as we looked at the conspiracy of theories. You can find information over at my website, darknessradio.com, about that. We had a fascinating conversation, and I love opening up on those type of topics. Looking for guests this evening, I was really intrigued by a couple of topics that came to the forefront. Being a paranormal enthusiast, somebody that's had experiences myself, somebody that calls himself a skeptical believer, meaning I've seen things, I've had experiences, but I continually question what it is that I'm experiencing. Where are these things coming from? How are we perceiving the paranormal? Why is it that there can be two or three or four of us in a room and one person is experiencing something so profound while others are completely left out in the cold? Is it because we're more in tune? We happen to be in vibe with what's going on in that room or with that spirit or watching the skies at the right time? Or could it be our perceptions? And a good friend of mine, a traveling companion who's been around the world with me and is an international speaker and author, Greg Lawson, will join me in the first hour as we take a look at detecting the paranormal and paranormal perceptions. What is it that we experience, and why do many of us define it as paranormal? Later on in the show, J.T. Townsend will join me. And he is a true crime author, rather. And we're going to talk about an interesting case. I love history, and I love when you can take a fresh look at historic stories and cases with a new twisted perspective. Tonight, we're going to talk about the Lindbergh baby, Charles Lindbergh, the baby kidnapping that took place. One of the world's most famous men, certainly heroic, and loved by the world for his aviation skills and abilities, and was looked upon almost as a royalty, a Kennedy of his time, if you will. He and his wife, power wife, had come together, created this beautiful child, and then a kidnapping took place. And there is a lot of bizarre twists and turns to this story, and tonight we're going to investigate those twists and turns, and you're going to find out some very interesting aspects of the life of Charles Lindbergh. And for those of you that are scratching your head saying, well, what do I care about? This is 80 some years ago. Well, it's because here's a man of privilege, of honor, somebody that was respected and looked at as a hero. Did he have knowledge of the abduction and murder of his own child? Could he have had a hand in it? There are many different theories, many different conspiracies cycling around this case. Tonight, we're going to take a look at them. J.T. Townsend has been diligently researching this topic and believes he has some answers for us. So that's what we've got on tap tonight. We'll take your calls here at the bottom of the first hour, and we'll entertain your calls again at the end of the show in hour four. But stay tuned. We've got a great show lined up for you. Coming up next with me, Greg Lawson, as we look at the paranormal through the eyes of a paranormal detective. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome to Coast AM. I am your host this evening, Dave Schrader. Joining me, Greg Lawson. He's a paranormal explorer, author, and international lecturer. He is a 10-year military veteran and is a career law enforcement officer who's currently a detective in Central Texas. And since 1982, Greg Lawson has served in the United States Army as an infantry parachutist, in the United States Navy as an operations specialist, and in the United States Air Force as a Security Forces Combat Arms Training and Maintenance Instructor. During his service, he received three campaign medals, and his deployments included Central America, Europe, Northern Africa, the Middle East, Asia, and two Western Pacific Sea deployments. Greg is a lifetime member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, and Greg received his master's degree in education, specializing in management of technical education, complex adaptive systems, and how to manage change within large organizations. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I've had great opportunity to travel with this man in groups to many different historic and haunted locations, and it's always a pleasure being in his company because he has such excellent insights on what it is that's going on around us. Tonight, we're going to talk about detecting the paranormal and paranormal perceptions. Greg, welcome to Coast AM.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks a lot for the invite, and thanks to Coast for having me.
Hey, it's a pleasure. This is something that, you know, fascinates me. I question when I have experiences with the paranormal, even though I've seen it, smelled it, touched it, been interacting with it. I'm still left wondering what exactly occurred around me. What made you decide to really want to break it down and look deeper into this subject?
Well, I've always been interested, as you know, and after some of the traveling that I've done and that we've done, and also, once I went back to school, the complex adaptive systems part of my schooling was pretty fascinating to me as far as how things affect and affect other things around you. So I just got really interested in it, and I decided to go ahead and apply that to the paranormal side and just see what I could come up with, what kind of answers I could come up with.
All right, well, let's start to break it down. You know, we are a complex and an amazing system ourselves, computer system, and have the ability to soak in a lot of data, rationalize it, make sense of it, sometimes re-evaluate it, refile it, and fool ourselves, right? I mean, we have amazing capabilities as a human.
Absolutely, and especially working in law enforcement, we see that quite often as far as individuals who believe that they're a witness or an eyewitness to a particular incident or a crime. And you come to find out, you review the video, and that's not at all what happened. Something completely different happened, and it doesn't match up with their quote-unquote eyewitness testimony. And that comes from just the way our bodies work, the way our eyes work, our senses work. And it also comes from, you know, as children, we experience things and we're confused by them, and we're told by adults what reality is, or what the adult actually believes reality is. So oftentimes the child will learn to not pay attention to certain things that happen to them. So that also makes it very interesting in the whole experiential part of paranormal.
Right. Well, we've heard a lot of times children have the ability to see things, experience things, because they haven't been polluted with the objections of the adults, right? Oh, no, that doesn't happen. There is no such thing as ghosts. There's not, and that really can shut down their perhaps innate abilities.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
My mother, when I was 5 years old, my mother told me, I remember specifically, I watched Frankenstein that night, and I had an experience of, a nightmare experience of hands coming out from under my bed, and I'm looking at my Sacred Heart picture of Jesus, which you mix Frankenstein with hands under a bed and the Sacred Heart picture of Jesus, it turns into Ted Nugent with his heart, you know, hanging out of his chest and barbed wire wrapped around it, you know. And I go to my mother. My mother tells me there's no such thing as monsters. There's no such thing as all this stuff. So that's kind of the beginning of suppression in, you know, a child's perception of what might be going on.
Right, but can we really suppress something just by telling them it does not exist? Can that really keep them from seeing and experiencing the what we would refer to as the paranormal?
Well, that's interesting. That's an interesting question, because when you're told something is supposed to be a certain way, your eyes and your brain will interpret it. But what most people don't really think about is we are all blind. We have these things called eyes, but we don't actually see what's in front of us. It's not projected on the back of our brain like a movie screen and we're viewing it. What our eyes do is they pick up radiation. They pick up the electromagnetic spectrum through the rods and cones in the back of your eyes, which are just membranes. They're not lenses. These are just membranes picking up certain wavelengths of radiation, whether it be green or blue or red, and then it transmits that through the, you know, through the optic nerve back to the back of the brain, and it takes about one third of our brain to then take that information that's given to it through chemical and electronic means, and then it has to reassemble it and make sense of it. So when we automatically have biases in certain things or assumptions, because we think that we live in a three-dimensional world. Mm-hmm. We think that everything has depth and width and height. You could say a four-dimensional world because we have time that's wrapped into that. And we automatically try to fit everything into that. And when something is missing, our brain will actually search through the rest of its memory banks and go ahead and throw the answer in there. And there's all kinds of, you know, eye tests and things that you can do that will show that your brain will actually fill in the empty spaces. So the answer to your question is yes. Our brain will try to make sense of something and will actually feed in into that void and try to fill that void.
So if I'm understanding, Greg, it's like a computer. A computer is nothing but a box, a component, and chips, and you have to teach those chips what to recognize, what not to recognize. What is something that will make sense for the parameters of whatever research or work you're doing with that unit? So if you're being told that ghosts do not exist, basically it's whitewashing that in your mind. It's like blanking that out, that will not be something that is recognized. You'll just go about recognizing normal everyday balloons and pets and babies and pretty women, but you won't notice the obscurities and the strange anomalies because that part of you was programmed out.
That's a very good possibility. Just from being told certain core principles, I was raised Catholic, so I have these core principles, the Ten Commandments and, you know, just all the other things that go along with that. I, as a young person, conditioned my mind to accept those thoughts and those beliefs. If you can think of your brain as, let's say, a grassy field, mm-hmm. and if you walk across that field one time, within the next day or so, you might be able to pick up a couple of footsteps through there, but then it's going to go away. But if you walk across that brain, or that field, I should say, multiple times, you're going to create a trail, and it's going to be a worn path there. Your brain's doing the same thing. Human brains are amazing. We get it wrong a lot. We think that information is stored in a particular area. And it is broken up like that in the brain, but it also is more like a schematic that you would take a picture. So let's say the taste of chocolate would take up five or six different spots in your brain. So it would be like a schematic. And your brain takes a virtual picture of that. Of what it experienced at the time that it experienced it, and it will use that again. So it's not like you can fill up one part of your brain. Your brain is going to be different parts of your brain are going to be used in different and in the same experiences. So when you practice at doing something, your brain is going to get better at it, whether that be taking in information or excluding information. We have this all the time. There's a thing called alarm fatigue that nurses have. If you've ever been in a nursing home or in a emergency room, each bed or each room has an alarm. You push a button and it goes off at the nurse's station. Well, it goes off so often in an emergency room or in a nursing home that the nurses don't even hear it anymore. They really have to consciously look up and see if there's any lights blinking because they get complete auditory exclusion from that because they hear it so much, and then they decide, okay, they just want me to bring them something to drink. It's not an emergency, so they minimize it. And your brain's doing the same thing. And a lot, our brain is a lot better at forgetting things and excluding things than it is actually memorizing things.
Wasn't that, that's scary, right? Because as somebody who's involved in law enforcement, realizing just how fallible we are, even if we are directly witnessing and watching it for ourselves, how wrong we could be.
Yeah. And as a law enforcement officer, I've been wrong before, you know, not paying really close attention to what's going on. If I have five or six different things that I'm doing, my brain is concentrating on the things that are very important. You think about it, you know, when you're you leave work and you're on your way home and you realize you get home and you go, wow, I don't remember anything on the way home.
Right.
It's not quite the UFO, you know, missing time thing, but it's because your brain was so busy focusing in on something else that that short-term memory, it didn't process it at all. It just let it, you know, go right away. But and that's one of the really amazing things about the brain and about our senses is if you really think about it, is what is in front of me really what it is? We all agree the color green is green, but your green could be completely different than my green. We're picking up the same wavelengths as far as the radiation or the photons that are illuminating, let's say, a blade of grass, but you actually perceive it as something different. You mentioned a computer earlier. That's a perfect example of what could possibly be going on with our relation to the world around us. Is we look at a computer and we see icons on the computer and we see, let's say, a Word document up there and it has some information on it. Is that reality? And I tell you, it is not. That is an interface to help the human being figure out what's going on actually in the computer, because the computer is just generating zeros and ones and different sequences to give us, you know, our data. So we're using this fake interface. So there's a lot of theory out there. When you throw in quantum mechanics and you throw in dimensional theory, that the things that we experience in front of us, the physical things that we experience in front of us, might not actually be those physical things. Because as I said before, we are blind and our brain is actually interpreting electromagnetic radiation and then reforming it into something that we can understand.
If that's the case, then when you think of things like the visions at Medjugorje or at Fatima, right, where they saw these pulsating lights in the sky and they were seeing the visage of the Virgin Mary, could it be that there were people in a highly suggestible situation that had come to one location to see this, and because some began to speak about it and say what they were seeing, do you think, in a sense, that what they were doing was projecting backwards or projecting the imagery to the rest, making it like a computer network? Once you've plugged everybody in and you flip that switch, they're all going to start to see the same Windows desktop, right? They're going to all start to see this situation unfold in front of them. Do you think there's a better chance of that happening as opposed to an actual anomaly taking place?
You know, that's a good hypothesis. I don't know. You know, the way our eyes work, we have cones and rods. The cones are picking up very focused, precise the way that we see. We need our cones for our of focus and precise vision.
Right.
The rods are picking up as much light as they can. So the cones only work to a certain spot as far as it when it starts getting more and more dim, and you know, you've been in that situation where it starts getting darker and darker and you start losing your colors, but you can still make out shapes. The bad part about when you go to darkness, the rods aren't as precise as the cones. So Whenever
Right.
you're talking about, let's say, visions or something in the sky, lights in the sky, or even lights or motion out of the corner of your eye, you have to always remember that your cones are probably no longer working and only your rods are. Your rods aren't providing really good focus because the cones are right in the back of your eye in a location called the fovea on the back of your eye. And the rods are all around that. Well, the rods aren't catching the light that's coming directly in. The cones are.
Right. So that could cause some of these shadowy figures that we think we see out of the corners of our eyes. Let's look more at paranormal perceptions when we return. Our guest, Greg Lawson, here on Coast to Coast AM. It's always a pleasure sitting in for George. He's out on the road, always having a lot of fun. And if you would like the opportunity to meet with George this July, he's going to be in Everett, Washington at the Everett Theater. Radio to stage, enjoy the grand experience. It's a Danheiser Wagner entertainment program bringing you the world's number one late night radio host live to the stage. Enjoy watching the host of Coast to Coast AM, Emmy Award winner George Norrie, as he interviews some of today's brightest experts in the world of ufology, paranormal, conspiracy, and all things unexplained. It's a three-hour stage show that consists of interviews combined with video, music, singing, and more, which create an unforgettable experience for all theater goers and fans of the very popular Coast to Coast AM radio show. You can also visit with George during his special event series, Eat and Greet Luncheons, at the Great Greek Restaurant in Sherman Oaks, California. You can enjoy gatherings with other like-minded people as you have fun at lunch and meet some of your favorite people in the world of the unknown and curious. Tickets do go fast for this, so reserve a spot now. Email your name and phone number to lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. That's lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. You will be called back with details. The following dates are currently available. Wednesday, May 17th, lunch with George Norrie and the Beverly Hills matchmaker, Marla Martinson. So make sure you go check out coasttocoastam.com to keep up with all of George's wanderings and where you can find him around the United States and around the world as he continues to go on out and share his insights and entertainment value right there on the stage with you. And remember, if you like what you hear on Coast to Coast, you're going to love what you see on Beyond Belief. That's George Norrie's TV show. They're now seven seasons in, over 259 episodes. The upcoming episode is Wednesday, May 3rd, Nostradamus' Prophecies for Our Time with John Hoag. You can find information and sign up. Start watching it right there at beyondbelief.com. Check that out for yourself, beyondbelief.com. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Greg Lawson. And we're going to discuss how the brain works when we experience memory and how are ghost hunters and paranormal investigators differ from ufologists and how they set about doing their work. We'll do that next right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to the show. I am your host for the evening, Dave Schrader. I'll be back again hosting Coast to Coast the last weekend in May. And I'm always open for topic ideas, things you'd like to hear me cover, and we get some of the best guests from you, the listeners. You can always email me directly, dave@darknessradio.com. Let me know what you think of the guests we bring on, what kind of topics you'd like me to cover, and I'd certainly try to do my best to accommodate as many of those requests as I possibly can. Tonight we're talking in this hour with Greg Lawson. And Greg, let's start to take a look at the way the brains work and memories. I mean, that's something that we all can attest to, right? You have fond memories of something, and you go back, and when you look at it, you realize, boy, this was nothing like I remembered it, or sometimes it's much better than you ever remembered it. How does that work?
That's absolutely true. Our memory is very malleable, so our brain creates memories. It can change those memories, and it can mm-hmm. eliminate those memories. And it does that through a whole bunch of different processes. It could be due to age, it could be due to stress, it could be due to a whole host of things, drugs, injury, or whatever. But most people think that memory is kind of the same. In other words, When you experience a chocolate bar that you really enjoy, it's the same thing as sitting and studying and trying to memorize, let's say, a spelling test or your times tables or something like that. But it's actually two different memories. You have what would be called rote memory, which that is the thing that when you're trying to memorize how to spell things, mathematics, the things that you actually have to sit down in school and study, that would be going into rote memory. Experiential memory is completely different. In other words, like the big experience for me that I give an example to was, I remember very clearly laying on a shag carpet, eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and watching the Challenger space shuttle explode right in front of me on this TV. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't remember exactly where I was when I ate that chocolate bar I really enjoyed, or I don't necessarily remember where I was when I was trying to memorize my times tables, but that experiential memory is huge. And so there's these different levels of memory that we have to deal with. And the interesting thing is that the memory that you can tie to emotions is a memory that you're going to keep for a long period without much study, like I said, memorizing your times tables. So these emotions really create that, what I was talking about earlier, that trail through the field, that grassy field, and all of a sudden you have a nice worn trail through there. Emotions do that very quickly. So you can crunch down emotions of the hundreds or thousands of emotions that you could experience. There's probably, you could crunch them all down to probably six or seven, which would be happy or sad or disgust and contempt, fear, surprise, anger. And when you tie those in with experience, those things last a long, long time. But if you're using flawed ways to bring that information in, like your eyes or your hearing, once that goes into your memory, that's where you get these strange, you can get these strange experiences that we've been talking about. So through that and through our ability to try to make sense of it, we can actually change that memory. And we can, like you said, minimize. You see something, for instance, I saw when I was five, those hands coming out from underneath the bed. Mm-hmm. As an adult, I can make those memories go away because I can say, well, that was just a nightmare that didn't make any sense. And I can eliminate those and I can turn it into something else. So memory is very, very malleable.
Right. And if you know, you find that in, you know, I joked around about this on Coast a couple of months ago, talking about the fact that I remember every Saturday morning getting up to watch Land of the Lost with my kids, or by myself, I should say, when I was a child, and loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was amazing. That show was state of the art, awesome special effects, giant dinosaurs living in the Land of the Lost. And I bought the whole thing on DVD, popped it in for my kids to watch, and 5 minutes into it, they had all walked out of the room looking at me like I was I should have been hospitalized. And I realized, how could my memory be so wrong about this? But it was something that I was so excited about as a child and just did not live up to the memory as it truly was.
Yeah, and you know, somebody who's got a really good perspective on that is Jeffrey Daugherty. I think he's going to be on Coast on Thursday. He's the Christian whistleblower, and he's come up with some very intriguing observations of things that happen in the Bible and how someone 2,000 years ago that had no training, no experience, would experience a particular phenomenon, whether it be spiritual or whether it be an ancient alien theory, how they would describe it and how it would end up being in the Bible. So you know, the ancient alien theory side of it, a lot of the things that are described in the Bible, for instance, let's say chariots of fire kind of thing. That's the only way that they could describe a, if there was a extraterrestrial spaceship or a flying, some sort of mechanical flying object, how they would interpret it. So you also interpret it relative to your experience. And when you don't have specific scientific experience toward whatever the actual event is, then you have to fill in the blanks. And you fill in the blanks based on your training and your experience.
Well, let's talk about, since you brought up ancient aliens, what is the difference that you found between paranormal investigators and UFO investigators and researchers?
Well, and there's a whole bunch of different UFO investigators also, as far as different philosophies. I have a high respect for MUFON, for nothing else other than their manual. Their manual mm-hmm. that they operate out of is as good as it gets. Now, each investigator could have, you know, pluses or minuses as far as their skill levels go. But they're operating out of a pretty standard manual for, you know, UFO observation, or if there was a UFO impact somewhere or some sort of evidence, latent evidence in an area, how they would go about collecting that. On the other side, as far as either ghost hunters, ghost investigators, or what I would am pushing for is more of a paranormal slash ghost detective, which you're taking in a lot more standard, industry standard ideas. In other words, what I'm saying is when you're using a K2 meter, what are you measuring? Are you measuring the fact that you think a ghost emanates some sort of a electromagnetic phenomenon, or are you saying that it is disrupting the electromagnetic phenomenon that is there, or what? So with a lot of the stuff that we use in what would be considered ghost hunting, what are we measuring? And that's the big question. You know, we're using echo boxes, spirit boxes, ghost boxes, K2 meters. And you have had experiences with EVPs that, you know, individuals absolutely misinterpreted what was going on with their electronic voice phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that. So
right.
There is that, of course.
We've got a couple of calls ringing in. Let me go west of the Rockies. Dave in Fairbanks, Alaska. Welcome to Coast.
Hi. I'm really enjoying the show tonight, and I would like to do three things. One thing, I'd like to make a comment. Two, I'd like to ask a question. And three, I have a suggestion for a future show. I'll do it real quick. Number one is, a lot of us here in Alaska love Coast to Coast. And whether it's my mom, Carrie Jurgens, or Mike in North Pole, or Gordon, who works with me at the federal building, we all love Coast to Coast here in Fairbanks. A lot of us do. My question for your guest, before I make a suggestion for a future show, is, as a law enforcement professional, what has been your most profound or your most memorable paranormal experience? And then my suggestion for a future show is, on May 13th, I believe it's May 13th, is the anniversary of Our Lady of Fatima. And if you could, or if you yourself, Mr. Schrader, could come up with a show, or even talk with George to come up with a show, because I believe that that's very, anyway, it's a very important subject.
Right, the message, it's definitely interesting.
Because
right.
it involves Russia and nuclear war. So it's very profound. But anyway, I'll take your comment off the air. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for listening and giving us a call. And if you have suggestions for future guests, just email them to me, Dave at Darkness Radio. What's one of the most profound experiences you would put into the category of paranormal or supernatural, Greg?
As far as my experiences, when I was a mental health officer, I got called out on you know, alien abduction experiences, you know, demonic possession experiences, those sorts of things. And as a mental health investigator, I saw certain things happen that didn't quite make sense. But I, working in that realm, I just didn't have enough time to really investigate it further other than just recognize the signs of mental illness and get this person some help. So I would have to defer saying personal experience other than I have a an associate that is a very professional family man, has been a cop for over 20 years, and his experience is pretty amazing. And he lives in a house, and when he goes to sleep at night, when he lays down, there is a little girl in the corner of his bedroom. And he told his wife about this experience, and she doesn't see it and is a little bit freaked out about it. And this guy had absolutely no reason to tell me this other than, yeah, I'm open to people having these experiences, and I try to help them rationalize it or figure out, you know, how can this be fixed or modified or whatever it is. And this is the most stand-up guy that you can find. And for him to tell me that this happens to him and that sometimes she wakes him up by tapping on his chest and his eyes, he wakes up and she's right there in front of him and then fades away. It's pretty, pretty amazing.
Yeah, definitely. Let's see if we can squeeze in another quick call. We've got East of the Rockies, Charles in Naples, Florida. Welcome to the show. Did you have a quick question for our guest?
Yes, I had a experience when I was about five. I was in my grandfather's house in North Florida, Phoenix Springs, where I grew up. And I was sitting on a couch. Everybody else was outside. I was by myself, piano behind me. And I started feeling this loud noise in my ears. And all of a sudden, I couldn't move off of the couch. And it felt like someone was behind me. And the noise got louder. And I kept trying to get up and look, and I couldn't. And the next thing I know, I'm looking down at myself sitting on the couch. And it wasn't long, and I just felt at ease after the noise went away. And I don't know what time period it was, but I was back in my body. Fast forward to third year of college.
We got about 45 seconds left here.
I just want to say this one other thing. Taking quite a few psych classes and business, I'm studying cramming in the living room of our house, and I feel that loud noise again, and it's like I'm asleep, but just starting to go to sleep, and I'm fighting it. I'm thinking I've got to get my parents out of the house. Something is happening, and then I quit fighting this noise, and the next thing, I'm flying through the atmosphere, going out towards out west where my brother was living in Denver, and flying all over the place, back across the Gulf, and then...
Fascinating. We've got to go, Charles. I'm sorry. I want to thank Greg Lawson for joining us. Remember, you can check out his website and get his book, Detecting Paranormal, by visiting theparanormaldetective.com. That's theparanormaldetective.com. And you can learn more about our guest and find out where you can meet him. He'll be joining me in London this year as we go on an 8-day excursion through Paranormal England, along with Neil's story, our host. If you'd like to join us, go check out darknessevents.com and click on the banner. All right, we've got more coming your way. JT Townsend joins us as we go out in search of the truth behind the Lindbergh kidnapping and murder. We'll do that next when we return.